Welcome back, everyone, to The Xamarin Show. I'm your host, James Montemagno, and I'm super excited to have friend of the show and personal friend, Dean Alice, on today, all the way from, are you in the UK? Where are you, good sir?
I'm in the UK. I'm in a little town called Bedford. For those of you that don't know England, that's north of London. Oh, that's okay. All you need to know.
I'll be over there pretty soon. I'm going over to, I'm going to fly into the UK. I'm going to go like south. Then I'm going to go north into like Scotland or somewhere crazy. I'm going to be all over the place for some events, so maybe I'll pop into you. But I'm super excited to have you on because we're talking about gaming. And you know I used to be a gamer. I still am a gamer. I just got a Nintendo Switch. Love it. But I used to actually make games on the Xbox 360, which is really awesome. I worked on Xbox Live Arcade titles, and then I wrote printer software. Yeah, no one knows this about me, but I actually have a game. And they ported it to Xbox One. But this was actually interesting because when I was making games, we were building our own engines from scratch, all in C++. Microsoft didn't release this thing called XNA yet, which came out right after we shipped our game, which was interesting. And you today, Dean, have the pleasure of telling us about Monogame, which I know tons of games have been built with, a whole bunch of awesome stuff. But before we dive into it, can you tell everyone here on The Xamarin Show a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm obviously Dean Ellis. I work at Microsoft. I'm part of the Xamarin Group. My day job is writing the Android tooling. So I spend my entire day living in MS Build. That's all I do all day. It's just MS Build tasks and targets files. That's it. So if you're building an Android app, the chance you're using my code. So I hope you like it, which is cool. But obviously, I'm not here to talk about my day job. I'm here to talk about my other day job, which is what we call it when we work on an open source project. And that's Monogame, which I've been doing for about five, six years now.
Yeah. So
believe it or not.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Monogame? So, I mean, to me, I know there's a lot of developers come to me and they say, you know, I'm a C# developer. I want to create some games. What can I do? And you know, normally developers think that they have to go write a bunch of C++ or it's too complicated to get into. Can you kind of give an overview of what Monogame is?
Well, Monogame started as an open source port of XNA, which you've mentioned before. XNA was this, I personally think XNA was the best set of APIs that Microsoft ever released.
They were good.
They were awesome. They're so easy to use. You know, quick to pick up. They've got universities in the UK here that actually use XNA and now Monogame to teach students how to code. Mm. I mean, that's how easy it is because it's just so easy to pick up. And what happened is that obviously someone back in the deep past wanted to get their XNA game running on an iPhone.
Mm. Yep.
So they started a project called MonoTouch, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Was it? Yeah, I think it was MonoTouch. Or XNA, no, XNA Touch, that was it. And that project just kind of grew and grew and grew. And then we've got Monogame, which is a complete implementation of XNA, but it runs on so many platforms. The original XNA ran on Xbox, it ran on Windows, and it ran on Zune, for those of you who remember Zune, mm-hmm. And the Windows Phone as well, which is, tip my hat to all the Windows Phone users out there. I'm one myself. But the Monogame takes this to a whole new level because we're on Linux, we're on Mac, we're on Windows, we're on Windows UWP, Windows Phone 8, normal Windows Phone, PS4, Android, iOS, obviously, using the Xamarin tooling. And also we've just released an announce for Switch. as well, so we're on the Nintendo Switch.
Nice.
And the PS Vita.
Very cool. So basically,
so basically,
XNA was this amazing library that you could make Xbox 360 games on. That's where I was really focused on first, and Windows desktop games.
Yeah, basically.
So Monogame leverages, I'm assuming, everything that we have in our .NET runtime, which is Mono. So you can leverage all of your amazing C# backend code, everything you love about Xamarin already, and then apply this 3D game engine on top of it, and that runs everywhere. Like, Switch now, it's the first time I'm hearing of this, so that's kind of cool. PlayStation, Linux, desktop, I mean, everything. So for me as a game developer, I just create my graphics, and then I start writing game engine logic. And is it similar to Xamarin? Like, do I have all the different projects, or how does my project structured, I guess? Am I in Visual Studio? Where am I?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're in Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio or even Visual Studio for Mac these days. I think the plugin works there. I haven't actually tried it, to be honest. but yeah, it's just Visual Studio. It's as easy to get started as you download the installer and run it, and then you do File, New Project, and you pick the platform that you want to do. And as a Xamarin developer, you'll be really at home because you'll have an Android project, you'll have an iOS project, you'll have a UWP project, but then you'll have these other projects like the cross-platform desktop project, which we call it, which uses a SDL as a backend, and that allows you to create one binary that works on Mac, Linux, and Windows.
Oh, cool.
Which will let you publish on Steam and various other bits and pieces. So as a Xamarin developer, you'd be completely at home with the kind of layout. You can use PCLs or shared projects. I'm a shared project fan myself.
Same.
Because it just makes it easier to use. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly the same kind of choices. Obviously, we use the same kind of back end. So we use Mono on all the platforms that need Mono. And then we use .NET on all the platforms that... like Windows and all that kind of stuff. And interestingly, we just had a guy, I was literally just on the chat room, and we just had a guy who ported Monogame to .NET Standard.
.NET Core.
Yeah.
So essentially, if there's a .NET runtime that can be there, usually powered by Mono, which is all open source,
then that
runtime, since it's our Mono, it'll be the latest and greatest, right? So all the .NET 4.5 features, C# 6, C# 7 now, I assume. So you can really leverage async await, all that goodness in a Mono game. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can do. I mean, generally speaking, you try and steer away from asyncs and await stuff.
You really want it to be 60 frames per second, probably.
Because you gotta run that thing as hard as you can to get that frame rate. But I mean, the interesting thing with the back end is there are platforms you may have noticed that I've mentioned that don't have a Mono backend.
Yeah, sure.
So there's PS4, the PS Vita, sorry. PS4 runs Mono, PS Vita doesn't, and Switch doesn't. So what's happened there is the project team leader, Tom Spillman, he's created a transpiler that takes IL and converts that into C++, portal C++, which we can then compile for the target platform. So you still write your game in C#, and then you just do this post-processing step afterwards to get your game binary, and then you can put it on the game. So, and he supports all sorts of platforms. There's Xbox One, the game partition, not the UWP side of things, because there's two partitions on Xbox One, and obviously PS Vita and now Nintendo Switch. So if people are interested in that, they need to reach out to Tom Spillman, and he'll get you in their beta program for their transpiler, which I think is called Brute.
Okay.
Which is quite a good thing. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of exciting as well. So with that technology, as well as all the Mono stuff, you can pretty much go anywhere. We just need the time and the effort to port it.
Got it. Yeah. So do you want to jump in and show people where to get started?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to hop over to your desktop here, and let's see if I can get this up here. There we go. Cool. Yeah, so where do we get started at?
Yeah, I'm just going to move you down the bottom. Well, the first thing you need to do is go and download the installer. So you can go to monogame.net or monogame.rocks, which I quite like. Just hit the downloads section. We did a release last week, basically, to coincide with the new XNA start Creators Club thing that Microsoft released last week. There was a big thing about indie developers on the Xbox One last week, and we did a new release to support that. So you just go to Monogame 3.6 on the download section, and there's all the installers you can get. So if you're in Visual Studio, just grab the Monogame 3.6 of Visual Studio, and that's a standalone installer. That will just do everything you need to. If you're on a Mac, just grab the Mac one. And if you're on Linux, because we support developing on Linux as well, you can grab the Linux one. There is some setup things you need to do on Linux, but there's a blog post around to help you do that. So I'm not actually going to download this stuff because I've already done it. So what we'll do is we'll just hop over to Visual Studio.
Cool.
We'll maximize that. Are you still seeing that? Maximized?
There we go. Yep, we're good to go.
Yep. Okay.
Looks good.
Okay, so we're in Visual Studio 2017. Which congratulations on the team for releasing this. Was it yesterday or
The beginning of March. Yeah, it was crazy. It was an awesome release. I've been using 2017 a lot on my personal machine. I really like it. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I made sure I updated as soon as it came out. So.
So once you install it, essentially, what all gets installed? Am I installing like assemblies? Am I installing tooling? What actually gets installed? I guess.
Well, you get a whole bunch of stuff. I'll take you through what it actually installs because it's kind of interesting because there'll be some developers who I'm sure will like to know. So we end up with a Monogame installation directory, which has all the assemblies for all the platforms that we support on here. So all the Android, these are all pre-built assemblies that you can use. But then we also put in the MS Build system a whole bunch of targets files and tooling. This is basically the content pipeline. And I'll talk about the content pipeline in a minute. Okay. But this is all the tooling for compiling shaders, compiling audio, and all that kind of stuff. We just put all this stuff in place, and then we put all the templates into Visual Studio. What you end up with is you can do File New Project.
I'm a big fan of templates. I don't know if you know. I love when things are done for me. So very cool.
Yeah. We like templates as well because it's a bit complicated to set up because we use a lot of MS Build integration.
Got it.
There's extra properties and extra imports that you need to put into your project to get the content process working properly. So that's what all our templates do.
Cool.
So let's start with a very simple project. So we're going to use this cross-platform desktop project to start off with. We'll just create that.
Yeah, and I see inside of there you have all the other Windows platforms, iOS, Android.
Absolutely.
Now you don't have to pay anything for a Monogame, right? Because if you're releasing for Xamarin, you're using the community edition. Everything works in the community edition of Visual Studio, I assume?
Yep, everything's free.
Cool, I love it.
Even the console ports. I mean, everything's open source.
Okay.
The console ports, say for Xbox One and PlayStation, they're open source in such that as long as you're on the development program for that platform.
Got it.
So if you're on IDEA Xbox, then you can get access to the Xbox, the game port, as it were, for Monogame. Or you can just use UWP, which is fine, which is completely open source. So everything's open source, everything's free, there's no charge, even for the console ports, there's no charge. Just as long as you're on their dev platforms, then you're fine. So,
love it.
Which is pretty good. Okay, so it's created a standard project. True to those of you who are XNA developers, you'll see this and you'll recognize all this code straight away. We've got a game one. This is our main game class. So this is where we'll start to write all of our game. And you get a whole bunch of boilerplate code just dropped in there.
When you say that XNA developers would be used to this, is it possible just to take your XNA code and then just drop it into a Monogame game? Is that possible? I'm sure there's some setup, but.
Yeah, I mean, the actual code itself, the C# code, you can pretty much use as is. Because if you notice, we've got the same namespaces. So it's not Monogame framework. It's the Microsoft XNA framework. And the reason we did that was so it's just to make it really easy for people to port.
Cool. Very nice.
Or get over. But the interesting thing is people aren't generally porting these days. They're actually just creating games with Monogame right off the bat. So,
Makes sense.
But if you are an old XNA programmer, you'll recognize a lot of this. This is all kind of very similar stuff. This is our game class. So, we can just run this up and it'll just create a screen.
So, this is that cross-platform desktop. So, this app would run on Windows desktop, Linux, Mac, or something like that, or just Windows or everywhere. Okay,
no,
got it.
This will run on Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Cool. Nice. That's awesome.
Which is quite cool. And you've got all the dependencies there. So we're using SDL2 as a back end, which is SDL2 is like a low level kind of gaming framework.
Okay.
But it provides input and windowing support in a cross platform manner. So we're leveraging that on this particular platform. It just makes things easy. But you've got all the binaries you need. So, I mean, that just gave me an interesting blue screen. Let's do some changes. Let's change the size of the screen. which is going to be fun. So we can set the preferred height. We say, no, 1024. And then preferred back width is 1280. Hopefully this will work. Say is full screen equals false. We just run that app. So we're just changing the screen resolution there. Just a slightly bigger screen. I'm on a Retina screen, so yeah, that doesn't take up much.
Yeah. But looking good, looking good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the API is very similar. It's very easy to use. But the only difference between XNA and Mono Game is the content pipeline. Okay. We took a slightly different route.
And what do you mean by content pipeline specifically?
Okay, so when you first start writing games, the temptation is to just use, say, WAV files and PNG files directly in your game.
Yeah.
But what you'll find is as your game gets bigger, you'll start to hit resource limits, especially on mobile, because if you took a standard 1024 by 1024 image that's RGBA, so it's like four color, you know, it's got all the colors, that takes up about 4 meg of video memory when you load it.
Got it.
So if you're on a limited, if you're on a platform that doesn't have a lot of video memory, you're going to be limited with the amount of graphics you can load. So what we do is we've got a content pipeline, which rather than compressing the textures or optimizing them on the device, we do that at build time.
Oh, okay. So, nice.
Yeah. So when we're targeting iOS, for example, we'll take that PNG file that you've got and we'll convert it into a compressed texture format that the graphics hardware on the iPhone knows how to load.
Got it.
The example I had is I had a test image. Again, it was 1024 by 1024 RGBA image. I put that through the pipeline and the resulting image was about 500K. So I saved about, you know, it was using a quarter of the space. And that's on the GPU.
Got it. And that's a lot when you have all these textures and everything's loading up. Yeah, you really need to be cognizant of everything you're putting in the game. Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people, they forget about the content pipeline, but it's really important, especially if your game gets bigger, to try and use the content pipeline, because it's not just for graphics, it's for audio as well. We optimize the audio for the target platform. Same for music and even 3D models at some point.
Got it.
So always try and use the content pipeline. Now, in the old days, you used to have an extra project in here, which was the content pipeline, but we've got this content MGCB file,
okay,
which is basically, if I just double click on that, it's going to open up the content pipeline tool.
Okay, cool. So like some additional tools for your game essentially to do that compression.
So hopefully people can see that. Cause
yeah, looks good. Looks good.
Yeah, it's fine. So what you do here is once you've got this tool open, then you can start adding files. So for example, I can add a new item. I want to create a font. So I'm going to add a sprite font. And this is a compiled font, effectively, that you can use in your game. It ends up as a bitmap font rather than a standard TTF or anything. So I'm going to create a sprite font there, which I could use. And then I'm going to chuck in, I'm going to find a logo from somewhere. So let's see what we got. Let's go in here and grab that icon. And I'm just going to copy that into the directory. So there we go. So I've just added a font and an icon, which I can then use. I'm just going to save that. Now, you don't actually have to compile. You can compile this stuff in this IDE if you want. But because of the MS Build integration, we can just go ahead and use this stuff directly.
Got it. So this is just kind of a nice external tool that is around. You can use it with it open, with it not open, and just kind of open up that file, essentially, no matter where you're at. That makes sense. Cool.
Absolutely. Interesting. I mean, the other interesting thing is if you're a designer, so if you've split your team up, so you've got a game developer and a designer, the designer could have a build of the game and then sit here with this tool, and they could update the images, compile it, put it into the game, and see the game without having to go to the developer and say, can you give me a new build?
Oh, that's nice. Very cool.
Because it's literally just these XMB files that get spit out.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So that's something they can do. So it's quite nice having this additional tooling. So we just added some stuff in there. And now what we want to do is actually load that. So we're going to create a sprite font. So we're going to call that font. And then we're going to do a texture 2D, and we're going to call that icon. So we're just declaring a font and an icon, which we've just added to the content pipeline. And I'm going to come down to this method called load content. And what this is basically your first opportunity to load graphics or audio or any other content that your game needs. You don't have to do it here. You can do it in your update methods and your draw methods if you want. But generally speaking, you try and do it on the load contents if you can, because you probably don't want to be loading content during an update loop.
Yeah, so I'd assume like anything that's kind of mission critical to get your game started would go here. And then if you're building a game that's like level oriented, you could implement some like level loading that gets loaded level 2, level 3, level 4.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can split your game up in any way you want, and then you can do nice loading screens and all that kind of stuff. So there are lots of XNA samples out there, which will just, you know, once you've brought the code into a monogame project, will just work. So there's good examples of how to do that kind of stuff.
Cool.
But for demo purposes, this is perfectly fine. So we're gonna load this font by using this content object, which is available. It's very similar. It's exactly the same as XNA. This is the content manager.
Nice.
It's got this generic load method. So you give it the type that you want to load. In this case, I want to load a sprite font. And then you give it the name of the item that you want to load. And we called it font. Now, note you don't have to put any extensions on there at all. The content pipeline will figure that out, whether it needs to load load the content, whether it needs to load the XMB or what have you. So
Got
that's
it.
Fine. So we'll do the same for the icon as well. So I want to load a texture, 2D, and we're going to call that icon. Oh, it's this new keyboard on my new Mac. So that's how easy it is to load a piece of content.
Okay, cool. And then you can display it.
Yeah, and then we could just display. Yeah, that's a little bit more interesting, but again, it's still very straightforward. I mean, that for loading content, that is an easy API to learn.
That's
you're just like,
easy.
I want to load this type, and this is the name of it. It's like, yeah, okay, that's fine.
And I saw that there's particles, there's textures, there's sprites, there's a bunch of other different type of sprite. Can you load like sprite sheets too? Like if you're doing like a 2D sprite game, I guess.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about monogame, it's not really, you probably couldn't class it as an engine because it's more of a framework. It's very low level. So
okay.
We provide textures, render targets, sprite fonts, sound, and music.
Got it.
And 3D models. So if you want sprite sheet support and all that kind of stuff, you either implement it yourself or go to the community, because there's a community project called Monogame Extended. And that builds on top of Monogame. It builds the APIs on top of it. So it's got support for sprite sheets, the tiled map editor. They're working on some UI stuff as well. There's all sorts of nice extensions to Monogame that are built on top of this particular framework. And there's also other 3D engines and all sorts of stuff built on top of these. There's an engine called Proto Game, I think it is, which one of the contributors works on, and that's a fully featured 3D engine. So
got it.
There are, if you do need something that's a little bit more advanced and you don't want to write it yourself, then go to the community, and there's lots of options out there, definitely.
Very cool. Cool.
So there we go. So we've got a font and an icon. Let's go and do something with that now. So being a game, we're obviously trying to render at 60 frames a second. What we're going to do is we've got an update call, which we use to update our game logic, and then we've got a draw call, which we use to draw the stuff.
Got it. This is your main game loops, essentially, that are going to be called as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah, you might be thinking, why don't we just have an update and draw method?
Yeah.
Some people might be thinking that. Well, for those of you that don't know, is your update method can be called more often than your draw method.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if you're drawing something and it's getting, and the GPU is getting a bit slow for whatever reason, your game might lose a couple of update steps, a couple of frames. So what happens is Monogame automatically compensates for that and will call your update multiple times to kind of catch up. So it's just be careful. So you can put your update logic in the draw method if you want to, but
yeah,
just watch out for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to do something. I just remembered something that I need to introduce. The thing we use to draw 2D stuff is called a sprite batch, and we declare one. We've declared one up here, which is quite cool. And what this does is it's just a way of batching together draw calls, so we're not just sending stuff to the GPU willy-nilly. We're just saying basically this is a bunch of stuff we want to draw. We're going to optimize it in a way that we can send to the GPU in the most efficient fashion possible.
Yeah, so I'm assuming if you were to layer 8 things on top of each other, you don't really need to probably even render all 8 things. It probably can do some like cross intersection type stuff and then batch it down. Is that the idea?
It's not that advanced in Monogame. The GPU takes care of a lot of that for you.
Got it.
But what happens is we do try and make sure that everything is sent in the right order and all that kind of stuff. So you don't necessarily it will draw in the order you give it, but you can override that if you want.
Got it. Cool.
So I just remembered that so if you noticed in the load content, we create the sprite batch here. So that's done as part of the template. So now what we can do is we can actually use the sprite batch to draw stuff. And what we do is we start a batch, and then we can say, I want to draw a string. And we're going to give it the font that we loaded earlier, and we're going to give it some text. So is it The Xamarin Show or just The Xamarin Show?
The Xamarin Show. Yeah, I was real creative with the title, as you can see. It's a show about Xamarin.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got the text, and now we want the position of where it's going to go.
Got it.
We've got a whole bunch of math classes built in. So we've got vector 2, vector 3, vector 4. We've got all the matrices stuff. So we can just put in the location. And we want the color that we want. So we're going to use Monogame Orange for that one. For those of you who don't know.
I like how Monogame has its own orange color. That's great.
It does. It's the color of the logo. So this is one departure from the XNA API, because XNA doesn't have that, unfortunately. But there we go.
And it's an addition too, so that's good. You know what I mean? It's not a breaking change.
Yeah. It won't break any existing code, which is good. So that's how easy it is to draw a string. Drawing a texture, we just use the standard draw method, and we put the icon in. And there's a whole bunch of overloads that you can use on here. It's really kind of interesting what you can do with this stuff. So you can change the source and destination rectangles, so you can sample from inside the texture. You don't have to use all of it. This is where your sprite sheets would come in.
Got it.
So you could just say, I want to draw this section of the texture, and then you can give it a destination rectangle, so it's over there, and you can rotate it and scale it and do all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Nice.
But in this case, what we're going to do is we're just going to stick it in the top corner. And again, you can give it like a tint. So in our case, we want to just do white, which is fine. And then once we've done that, we can just end the batch.
Cool.
Okay, so what we can do, just run that up. And that font is really small.
it's
there, yeah. That's right there.
Can you scale it? Yeah.
We can go in and actually change the font. So let's have a look at what the sprite font looks like, because it's really easy to mess about. This is just an XML file.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice. So you can change the font that you want to use. You can change the size. So let's just whack that up to 48. We can make it bold or regular. You can either change the character sets. So by default, we just do the standard ASCII set. But then you can change. So if you're not using if you want to save space and you're not using the entire ASCII set, you can drop it down.
Oh, nice.
And lots of stuff. So it's that's pretty good. So if I just run that up again, and you'll notice that the content pipeline has automatically picked up that changed and compiled it, and there we go. So we've got a nice bigger font there.
Beautiful. So now our game is coming together. It's looking real good. But that's cool, because literally that's like 6 lines of code, and I have a window open. I'm drawing fonts, I'm drawing text, I'm drawing pictures, I'm drawing a background color, and that's actually being updated nonstop. I don't have to do anything else. Like, the Monogame is just doing that for me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, obviously, we've got, as you can see here, if you look on line 70, we've got some input processing going on here as well. So that's pretty easy to do. The APIs are very similar. So you can just grab the current. You have to remember, if you're coming from an application developer's point of view, you're used to events kicking off time, aren't you? In games, you generally don't get events. What you get is, this is the state of the system right now.
Mm.
So when we say gamepad get state or keybag get state, it's basically saying, give me the state of the keyboard right now or the gamepad right now. It will tell you which keys are up or down. You don't tend to get events, but then again, that's where, you know, Monogame Extended, that'll probably have an event. I think that has an event-driven system that you can hook into if you like that kind of code. But many people, they just say, just get me the state and I'm going to deal with the state right now.
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah, and you would kick off, so... yeah, I hit the A button, so now this little player jumps or whatever, and that kicks off some logic loop that is running, and then it goes from there, essentially.
Yeah. So I mean, if you wanted to, so let's do a little, as we've mentioned it. Let's do a little a little thing. We're gonna say color, and we're gonna call this tint color.
Okay.
And we're just gonna use the tint color in there. So we'll default it to. Color the mono game orange. But then what we'll do is we're just going to say if keyboard get state player index one. So you can get different players as well, which is quite cool. Is key down keys. So we'll go with spacebar for now. Actually, I'm not going to use an if because ifs are so last. You know, last century.
There you go.
We're going to use it. You're going to do this properly, man. So if it's down, we want to make it, I don't know, black. Otherwise, we're going to default to monogame orange. Okay, so the idea now is that when I press the space bar, the tint color on the text is going to change.
Got it. Cool.
Well, there we go.
There you go. Nice. Very cool. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because now you draw, so you get the update, then you draw, and then it loops, and it's always constantly updating. Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
So, and obviously, you can do the same thing for the mouse input, the touch panel input, and all sorts of other stuff.
Very cool.
So it's pretty good. It's very easy to use. I do actually have another demo that's slightly more involved than this one.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay. A little bit more than text and an image. I like that. I want to see. So that's the file new experience. That's actually really nice. I mean, it's really easy to kind of get started and do some stuff, which I really like about Monogame. And I know C#, so this all looks very familiar to me. I'm not learning new languages. I just kind of have to understand. I have to change. It seems like I have to change that state of mind of, oh, I was developing apps before, and now I'm developing games. So I got to realize that. Oh, it's got to be super performant. We always want our apps to be super performant, but it's always running and it's looping, and there's more work being on the GPU, essentially.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah, basically.
Cool.
So
let's see what you
this
got.
Demo is slightly different. I've got a nice, slightly different project structure over here because this is how I would put a project together if I was developing a game. So I've got a shared project here, which has my game code in it. And then I've got my content pipeline in there as well.
Okay.
But then I've got all these other projects. So there's the desktop project there, and there's the iOS project. And all these do is they just reference the shared project that I've got.
Perfect.
So if you're a Xamarin developer, this is a normal thing to do. So this is, you know, even the TVOS one there, that's using the shared project as well.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, put your games on the TV, right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, we've got there's a game already using TVOS, Supergiant. They've got a game called Transistor, which is on TVOS, I think. They use a really old fork of Monogame, but yeah, I mean, it's just shows how well, I wouldn't say it's not necessarily easy when you got a game that big, but it's all doable.
It's all doable.
Within reach. It's all within reach. Yeah, you just have to have the the time and effort to do it.
Yeah.
So I've got a shared project and I'm using that code through all the other platforms that we've got there. There's very little. We do have some hash defines or if defs here. Hash ifs. There's not many of those. There's one.
for like key around, state, it looks like. Yeah,
which is all down to do the, this is to do with the exiting the app, because tvOS and iOS, there's no concept of exiting the app.
Got it.
The operating system will decide, or the user will decide when to kill it. So it's not really down to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and as a result of that, we've actually raised that, will, if you have that, the exit statement in an iOS or tvOS app, if you try and use the exit statement, it will generate a compiler error. Telling you that's not supported on these platforms. And we did that for good reason, because, you know, people were saying, I'm trying to exit and it's not working. But it's just like, yeah, you just can't do it. So let the operating system do it. Cool. Okay, so let's have a quick look at the content we've got in this one very quickly. So we've got a couple of bitmaps. We've got the font. We've got a WAV file there for some audio. And we've got a couple of FBX files. These are 3D models.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Are they come from, oh man, I'm going to date myself because I used like 3ds Max back in the day. Are they like DirectX models? Are they something specific? What kind of models does MonoGames support?
Well, FBX is, we support all sorts of models. FBX is the one that we officially support, but we got do it. Use the Open Asset Importer, I think it is. Mm. There's a cross-platform open source model importer that we use as part of our pipeline. So you should be able to use an obj file, 3ds file, max files possibly even. Cool. But generally we tend to use the FBX file format if we can.
Cool.
It has to be the newer FBX format. If you're grabbing a model from an old XNA sample, you generally have to upgrade it to the latest version of FBX, which is what I've done here. So if you've used a 3D model from one of the XNA samples, you'll recognize what you might recognize this ship.
Got it. Okay.
You might not. but yeah, so you can do models, and you can do all sorts of stuff here. You can change all these properties. So you can change the texture format, whether you want to do mipmaps or not, and whether you want to rotate the model in a particular way. And all of that happens during the build process. Okay. And the same with all these things. We can change the, like the key color, if you're going to use color key transparency, whether you're going to resize the power to, and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So, but yeah, so we've got all the, that's all the content that we've got there. So now we need to load and use some of that stuff. So once again, we just start at the top and we'll work our way down.
Sure.
So we've got a sprite batch as before. We've got a texture and a font, which is fine. We've got a WAV file that we want to use. So we just declare a sound effect. Which is good. There's also another class called a sound effect instance, which has slightly more control. So the sound effect is basically a fire and forget. So there's a play method on it, and you say sound effect play, and it just plays. Whereas a sound effect instance, you can do things like change the pitch and stop and start it. And so if you want more control, sound effect instance is the one you want to go with. We've got this model here, which we're going to use to load a model. And then we're declaring a vector 3, which is going to be our camera position in 3D space. I'm not a 3D expert, just warning you about that. So if you ask me how any of this matrix multiplication works when we get further down the code, I'll refer you to the internet.
There you go. Yeah, look up Matrix Max. Go take a course real quick. Yeah. I have to do a refresher myself. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Quite a while for me. So yeah, as before in the previous sample, we're just creating our graphics device manager, which is how we set our properties. We've got this new thing, which is the orientations that we support. So if you're supporting a device that you can rotate, like iOS or a mobile, any kind of mobile device, you can define which modes you support. So if you just got a landscape game, you can lock that in.
Got it.
Right, yeah. In this case, we don't care, so we're just supporting all of them, which is fine. And then we got some other stuff there. We do have what we call a touch panel, which people can use to detect touch on mobile devices. And we've got limited support for a small number of, well, basic gestures. So you can pick up these kind of gestures. So a double tap, a tap, horizontal and vertical drags and all that kind of stuff. So if you've got some stuff you want to do with that kind of gesture, that supports in there as well.
Nice.
Content load, very, very simple.
Yep.
Just like we did before, I want to load a model. This is the name of the model I want to load. And away you go. Same with sound effect, all that kind of stuff. And this is where we get into the input stuff that we're talking about. So this is the update method. So I'm grabbing the state of the keyboard and the gamepad and the touch panel. And then based on the values, we're going to decide what we're going to do. So we're going to decide if we want to rotate the model left or right. So we check to see if the keyboard is down. If so, we go left. We've also got gamepad in there. So if the thumbstick is like move to the left, we're going to rotate to the left.
Got it.
And so we do the same for, you know, the right key. And if we've got the space key or they press the A button on the bar, we're going to fire that sound off. We're going to play the sound.
Nice.
Which is cool. And then obviously we've got the touch state. So here we're just looping through any, because you get an array of all the points that have been touched. So if someone puts more than one finger down, you can deal with all that here.
Got it. So if you're on the left side of the screen, on the right side of the screen, as long as it's down, we're going to rotate. Got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So that's what that's doing. And then this is going through the gesture stuff. So if we've got a gesture available, we'll just, because this is like a stack of gestures, because you want to process them in order. This API came out of the Windows Phone thing, so it might look a bit strange, but it works really nicely. So we just say, while we've got a gesture available, grab the gesture, and in our case, if it's a double tap, we're going to hit fire.
Got it.
We're going to
cool.
play fire.
Yeah, so if you're holding down while it's holding down, do this stuff.
Yeah, basically. Yep. So that's fine. And then we've got some math going on here to rotate the model, and then we've got a little thing that we're going to rotate the icon by.
Cool.
Which is fine. So the interesting thing, what I generally recommend to people is with the update and draw methods, you get this game time object passed in. And that gives you some interesting properties. It gives you the elapsed time, which is how much time has passed since the last frame.
Oh, okay, got it.
So instead of, if you're going to move an object, instead of moving it by one pixel every frame, what you can do is say, I want to move it by this amount, but I want to multiply that by the amount of time that actually elapsed. And what you end up with is it smooths out the movement.
So that way, because your game dips a little bit, right, it will be able to recover. That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's always, if you can, use the elapsed time. There's also a total time that the game is running.
Got it.
And I don't know if you remember last time I told you about when sometimes one game will call the update method more than once. If you get into, if it's running slowly, if you get into that situation, you'll see this is running slowly flag will get set.
Got it.
And what you can do there, which is even, I've seen people do this, is when the is running slowly thing is true, they skip a lot of game logic.
Yeah, got to get through the game logic as fast as possible. And then, because you don't need it. Yeah, makes sense. Cool.
Yeah, I don't really need to do that. I don't really need to update the animation for the UI this frame.
Got it.
Let's leave that. So you can do that kind of stuff. Cool. So, yeah, use the game time if you can. And then we come to the draw method. And you'll see down the bottom here, we've got the same stuff. We've got draw string, which we looked at earlier, which is going to draw some text. And then we've got draw, which is going to draw the icon, which is cool. And then we've got this whole bunch of code here.
Yeah, I see a lot of code up in there, yep.
Yeah, this is all for drawing the 3D model.
Ah, okay, gotcha. It's a little bit more in there to do that.
Yeah, because there's obviously some maths involved. So we create a projection matrix, which is how we basically project the 3D model onto the screen.
Got it.
I think that's right. Then we've got a view matrix, which is kind of, if you think about that, is the camera position is where you're standing there with your SLR camera or your digital or your iPhone. And the view is the kind of field of view that you get out from your iPhone to the scene. Mm. So, yeah. So that's, and it defines where you are and which way is up.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Got it. Cool.
So we know, like I say, if you want all the maths, just, I'm sure there's sites on the internet to do all
yes,
that
and some documentation, stuff. Take a look at some samples. We'll put them in the show notes, right? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. And then basically we just, you don't have to worry about this transform stuff. That's to handle if you've got animations in your model. But then every model is made up of meshes. So we just loop through each mesh. Each mesh has a shader associated with it. In Monogame, we call those effects. And then for each effect, we then go and draw the mesh basically. But we need to apply these, like the view and the projection and the world matrix. So like I said, the view and projection we've already talked about. The world matrix is where that model is in the game world.
Got it.
So in this case, it's basically at 000, which is the center of the game world. But we're creating some rotation around X and Y to make things look nice, cool. Basically. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's basically drawing a 3D model. So if I just run that up, we'll see this on the screen, and that's our 3D model.
Cool. Nice.
Which is quite nice.
Yeah. So responding to input, doing rotation, and putting all those meshes in there. Very nice.
So if I just change, I'll just change the X rotation a little bit, and you can see it's at a slightly more steeper angle now.
Got it. Cool.
Which is fine. So that's quite cool. And the interesting thing is, apart from that one hash define, we can actually get this to run on. We'll run it on the iOS. So let's just see if I can get over to my. I'm hoping this is going to run up on my simulator. Let's drop out of full screen mode.
There we go. Cool.
And pull up the simulator.
And you do the same if you wanted to put it on Android or tvOS. It's just like any other application development. It's just that one logic, and everything else has been scaffolded for you, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Nice.
So we take care of the hard work of all the platform abstractions. And we've just got this one really nice API that... that you can use to write your games with.
Nice. So let the simulator spin up. Everyone's favorite part of iOS 10.2 simulator. This is a long load time.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't that bad. So there you go. So that's the exact same code.
Very cool. And you would probably put some logic in there based if you were on phone or if you were on desktop based on how you want to do... like landscape versus portrait. You can put that all pragmatically, like you saw up top, essentially of how big the screen is and things like that. And it handles the scaling, because I mean that's a very different resolution on an iPhone versus on desktop. And Monogame handles all that for you.
Well, the resolution side of things, you sometimes have to deal with it yourself, because Monogame will only take you so far.
Got it.
I've done an interesting blog post. I've done a couple of them actually on how to deal with different resolutions on devices.
Oh, cool. Nice.
In such a way that you can take into account, you can do the letterboxing. So, it will scale to the screen and all that kind of stuff, which is quite good. So just to kind of finish off, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a new project here.
Oh, cool.
Just to show how easy it is to just port to another platform. So what we're going to do is we're just going to use the Windows 10 Universal platform. So we're going to call this develop UWP.
Yeah, because often you might just release first on one platform and then make sure that's super tested and then go to another platform. It's kind of like, I know a lot of game devs do it. It's hard to launch simultaneously, and let alone just mobile, then desktop and Steam and all these other platforms that are out there.
So you're gonna get this situation. So we've created the project. Ignore all the errors. That's just standard with a UWP project. This is what happens. So what we've got now is we've got a basic a template. So we need to get rid of the stuff that we don't need in this project so we can use our shared project. So the first thing we're going to do is get rid of our content MGCB, because I'm going to reuse the one from the shared project. So I don't need that. I'm going to get rid of game one, because that's just the template game one.
Yep.
So I don't need that. And now I just need to add a reference to my shared project. And hopefully we'll set that and it will build. Although it's probably going to download some stuff from the internet.
Get all those nougats, all those nougets.
Yeah. Nougets.
Got to have them.
Now, the really nice thing that I like about UWP is, have you got an Xbox One at home?
I do. I do. I have an Xbox One, yeah.
Yeah, do you know you can turn it into a dev kit?
I've heard that they finally enabled that, and I've seen a bunch of games and games and apps even. I think some people even published some Xamarin Forms apps on there because it's a UWP app, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just normal. But you can actually, if you go and activate your Xbox One as a dev kit, then when you reboot into it, you can actually, the UWP app that I've just got here, I could run that on my Xbox One.
Oh, cool. Does it come up as a target in Visual Studio? Like, oh, deploy to Xbox.
What you do is, I'll just run this up so that actually worked. Right, okay. I know what that is.
Little configuration manager.
Configuration manager.
Everyone's best friend.
Yeah, we love you. So the this is just a standard UWP app. So we've done some nice stuff to get it all working. I didn't try this before the show, so I'm surprised it didn't crash.
And it works.
And it works. So there we go.
Nice.
Which is fine. Which is cool. So if I wanted to deploy that to my Xbox One, what I'd do is I'd come in here and I'd say remote machine.
Ah.
And what would happen is, what you need to do is you enable your Xbox One as a dev kit.
Okay.
Make sure it's on a wired connection because it doesn't work over Wi-Fi.
Sure.
So the Xbox One has to be on a wired connection. Your laptop doesn't. And then it will appear in your list of devices here. You can just select it and then run.
Cool. Awesome.
And it will just deploy it, and then you can sit on your sofa with your controller and play again.
Very cool. Now, yeah. So that's pretty awesome. These samples, are there a bunch of samples on the Monogame website to get started, or some other documentation that people can go to?
Generally, the samples-wise, we're still trying to work on our samples because obviously it's a community project.
Yep.
People have limited time, so we're trying to get the samples. What I will do, though, is I will push this developed solution that I've got here. I'll push that to GitHub. Either tonight, and then we'll get that up so it's in the show notes so people can just download it and have a play.
Totally.
Documentation wise, there is documentation on monogame.net. So if we head back to that, we've got a documentation section there.
Cool. It's a work in progress, but it's there.
It's a work in progress. We've got a link to a whole bunch of tutorials that the community have done. Note, some of these will probably be out of date because the content pipeline, for example, is recent. That's only been in there for about a year. I think we first announced it at Evolve, not last Evolve, but the one before.
Got it.
So some of these might be a little bit out of date because it used to be a real pain to use because you had to build the XMB files yourself and then link them in your project manually.
Got it.
But now we've just taken care of all of that for you. So, there's a whole bunch of tutorials there, and there's notes on the tools and using the content pipeline, all kinds of other stuff. Now, if you want to learn the API, all the XNA documentation is still available.
Oh, so it's still stuff, right? It's the same stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
So if you go to Google, right? Let's just go to Google and we say XNA documentation, and we can just go, yeah. Is that going to be that one? It's XNA4 you want to look at. And here we go. I mean, this is a good place to start.
Got it. You know, that makes sense. So yeah, after the scaffolding, which is mostly created, all the XNA, since it's the same API, applies.
Yeah, absolutely. The only difference, like I said, is managing your content. So in the XNA, it will say, oh, you need to add this to the content project.
Got it.
So what you need to do is, in your mind, convert that into our content project. But everything else is exactly the same. So if we just look at very quickly. Let's have a look at see what this one, your first game. That's just installing the software. Oh, look, see? My texture 2D. Loading the texture in local.
Nice.
This is based, I could have just given you the documentation, James, for the show, couldn't I?
Probably could have. Very cool. That's nice. I mean, that's really nice that even that, you know, when you're looking for Monogame documentation, it's going to be very similar. Now, Monogame has been around for a long time, and there's been a bunch of games that have been published that people know. You mentioned Transistor. I know Bash. I know Matt Makes Games. Towerfall, for instance, which I'm a huge fan of Towerfall. is on tons of different platforms, which is awesome. And I know I did a Kickstarter for the guys that did The Incredible Baron, and they're coming out with a new game. Every time I always go and I was like, hey, you know, is it hashtag built with mono game? And I would like to follow that hashtag because there's always a bunch of cool stuff. Are there any other games you want to highlight that you know that have been made with mono? Well, you know, obviously Infinite Flight and stuff like that.
Infinite Flight, that's one of my favorites, that is. That's a flight simulator that runs on mobile. A fully featured multiplayer 3D flight simulator that runs on mobile. I mean, if someone actually dreamt that up as a Kickstarter project 5 years ago, people said you're nuts. There's no way you could do that one. But yeah, that's a really, really good one. Obviously, Tower 4, Bastion's another one that's used mono games, especially on iOS. Skulls of the Shogun is another favorite.
Oh yeah.
Axiom Verge. That's on. That's come out recently. There's Stardew Valley.
Oh, that's a mono game game?
That's a mono game game.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. Big fan of the Stardew Valley.
Well, you're going to get really excited now because they announced last week that they're going to come out on Switch.
Oh, I can't wait. There goes all my weekends. Besides Zelda, it's all Stardew. Oh, so good. Awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's just loads of games. There's a lot of high profile ones, but if you follow the at Monogame Team Twitter account, mm-hmm. because we're a community project, we do our best to support the developers that are using it. So if people hashtag built with Monogame or just hashtag Monogame in a tweet, we'll retweet them. And we like to hear from the community to say, yeah, this is what we've done. Because, you know, we're only here because of the community that uses us. So if no one used it, it'd be like three blokes in a room.
Well, awesome. This has been so awesome. I'm going to put a bunch of the links in the show notes. Dean, thank you so much for coming on to the Xamarin Show and talking about Mono Game. Yeah, we'll have to have you back. New releases, everything like that. I want you back on and talk about that goodness. But thanks again. All the way, I know it's probably late over there in the UK, so go get some rest. awesome. I appreciate it again. Until next time, I'm James Montemagno, and this has been the Xamarin Show.